along and been following Molly Ivins. We know who she is, but as Lillian said, that was 2007 that she passed. All right. Okay, we got to get out here, folks. Make room for the next show. We will see you next week. Have a great weekend.
That cool beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals 8 p.m. Thursday, and it's time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and alongside a team, I can't talk tonight, I just teach speech, alongside a team saturated in talent, Greg Audell, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, and our irreplaceable media maven and engineer, Tatiana Gago, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls before returning us safely to the present. You know, time stands still for no one, but it moves at a ridiculous clip between fun drives. There's always one around the corner, so it seems. But there's a good reason. Because corporations don't interfere with the eclectic programming on 90.1. Pacifica is about freedom of expression, not restricted censorship. New shows that catapult you into new perspectives. Talk shows laced with dynamic dialogue. DJs who drop needles on tunes you won't hear anywhere else on the dial and this program. It's a gem that you're only going to find here. You know, since 2008, we've spotlighted human narratives and traditional stories. Some told by pros, but most told by you. Your neighbors, teachers and students with poignant messages to holiday favorites. Mothers and fathers with stories of love and pain. Lawyers like Nikki Cazares, responsible for the exoneration of Anthony Graves. Doctors with tales of tragedy and jubilation. Actors whose stage face changes dramatically to the storytelling personas they showcase here. Trajectories and episodes defining the life of our community. Because always live, So What Your Story is an icon for community radio. So tonight, I'm going to ask you to call in your donations to one of our steadfast volunteers at 713-526-5738. I will thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. We'd love a call because it shows the world that you're listening, and that means a lot in convincing KPFT leaders that we belong here. If you don't like the phone, no problem. Go to www.kpft.org, then to donations, tell us how you want to pay, and scroll to see what your story is, a program that you wish to support. I'm going to talk a little more about our spring drive in just a bit, but not until you get a feel for what you're paying for, like storytellers ready to entertain the hell out of you. Right, guys? Is that right? Everybody?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. You know, I spilled some water here so far. Our mic wasn't working, and we're having a really great night, which also explains why we need the money, because we have no more paper towels. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. No kidding. You know, I lassoed four students from my recent storytelling class to help win you new listeners over in particular. They love the pressure, so you're going to love them. They are Heidi Lozano, Kenneth Martinez, Rico Henrique, all newbies in the world of radio telling, and Chuck Vaughn, a veteran of this program and someone for whom I have very unrealistic performance expectations. Welcome, everybody. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Heidi, let's start with you, huh? Now, you're a pre-med major and majoring in psychology and minoring in communication. I know you may have changed that configuration a little bit. And you're also vice president of the Psychology Club and an active member of the Greater Texas Foundation, which supports initiatives that increase the rate of post-secondary enrollment for Texas students, right? It's a great incentive. How'd you get involved in Greater Texas?
Well, it all started in high school when I received an email from the director of the program. He told me about it, and well, I was instantly hooked, so I was like, why not go for it?
That's how you got started?
Yes.
And how has it helped you?
Well, they have helped me financially. Mm-hmm. They have also helped me in getting some leadership roles. They have helped me in, well, just to get more involved in the school.
Very good. Now tell me, why would a pre-med major take a class in storytelling? Easy A, you thought I was cute. I mean, what exactly got you to that class?
Well, storytelling helps you be able to interact with your audience while sharing intrigued stories. You build a relationship with the audience, and right. That's what I want to do as well. You build a relationship with patient in a way I can communicate with them a little better.
You know, the idea of storytelling and healing has always been one of the very powerful themes on our show. We've had many physicians on the show talk about how patients who tell stories, how they reveal and they dig deep, somehow enhance their own healing process. So the idea of looking at storytelling and healing is very, very much related. It really is inextricably related. Heidi, it was the simple theme of your last story that you told in class that impressed me. It's a focus episode so unassuming that it stayed with us just as it'll stay with our listeners. Tell us your story.
Well, family trips are memorable moments in our lives. These are moments that we should always cherish and keep in our hearts. I will never forget my family road trip. It was a couple of years ago. My family and I went to Florida. We were on our way to Disney World, and we were all so excited. Once we got to Disney World, my sisters and I went to the rides. There was so much fun. After we left, we headed to my aunt's house, and I was excited because I hadn't seen her for a long time. I was also excited because I heard that she had coconuts, and I love coconuts. I was sad because I wouldn't be able to see her, but I was happy because I took some coconuts with me. After a while, it was time for us to head back home. But before we left, we stopped by Chili's to grab something to eat. I was getting out of the car, and once I was out, my dad held me by my shoulders. Heidi, never forget these moments. You should always keep them with yourself. These are moments that you should always cherish and keep in your heart. In that moment, I knew that the best part of my trip wasn't the rides or the coconuts, but it was that time that you spend with your family. It's the time that you cherish with them and spend and be able to communicate. This is why we should always cherish these special moments, because I was able to understand and appreciate the sacrifice and how they spoke to us and the moment that they take to spend time with us.
That's a beautiful story, and it really is so simple. What inspired you to tell that kind of a story? Does your dad know that you tell that story?
No, he doesn't know.
He does not know. You going to tell him that story?
I'm pretty sure he heard.
Well, you know, Father's Day is coming up in June. It's a pretty beautiful gift. But what inspired you?
Well, when we got the assignment, well, I was kind of hecked. I was like, what do I talk about? But this was the only thing that came to my mind. I was trying to think for something else to say, but I was like, well, let's just stick with this.
Well, you had other stories during the course of the semester, but this one was so remarkably well focused. It really was really well focused, and we learned so much about your relationship. As a matter of fact, that's what all four of you have in common tonight. It's that inextricable relationship with a human being that really makes your episode so gracious and really anchors it in so many different ways. In a word, Heidi, what do you want us to remember about your story?
Acknowledgement,
meaning we want to acknowledge the people we love.
Exactly. Acknowledge those special moments that we take.
And your father acknowledged you.
Yes.
And that's incredibly special.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Houston native, Ricardo, or as we like to call him, Rico, or he prefers actually, Rico Enrique, sure, is a communication major and currently an intern for UHD's iRadio, a personal project of mine. He's going to be the station manager at UHD iRadio this fall and an intern here at 90.1, initially watching and learning from Tatiana. There's too much to learn, but he'll try anyway. He's also got a gig at ESPN this summer, and that should put him in good position for future radio work. He's also a partier, he claims, and he knows the seedier establishments, which, if you dare to enter them, are apparently some of Houston's best-kept secrets. Rico, what are some of these seedy joints that you're talking about?
Well, kind of like you said, Doc, they're seedy and they're secretive. So me telling you,
they're seedy and they're secretive. So okay. No particular part of town. They're just all over the place.
Yeah. Houston's full of them. You could find it. Just wander around a little bit at 2 in the morning.
And someone really has to know you well in order for you to show them where they are.
That's right. Trust is a big thing.
Very good. All right. That ought to work well on ESPN. But congratulations on ESPN. What are you going to be doing for them?
Well, they were kind of offering me either social media, doing some tabling out on college campuses, or to be part of the file management team, doing some archiving. But that's kind of what I do already. So yeah, I asked if I could do both, and they said, sure, why not? And I'd get paid for it a little bit. So
beautiful.
I'll do it.
Beautiful. Good for you. We're proud of you, man. Rico, you tell stories about your dad. And like Heidi's, they gravitate toward the very unpretentious, even the innocent. And the last one that you told in class made an indelible impression for that reason, but also revealed something about your relationship with your dad, and that was special. Tell us your story.
So Dr. Seuss had said, "Don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened." Now, when I was young and I read Dr. Seuss stories, of course, I was thrilled by them. I was full of life and energy. Happiness and innocence came naturally to me. Life was an oyster, and even though I didn't like seafood, and I still don't, I appreciated it. So I was pretty young, so long ago I can't even remember, but I was young enough to have a lot of emotions about it. But I was in school, and I just remember one day when my dad was leaving to work, I was saying bye to him, and I'm in the garage, and I hear this bird flapping around. So we catch the bird, and we're trying to release it, and it's just floating around in our front yard. So it's not going away, and being so young, I was thinking, this is a sign. I need to have this bird. It wants to be with me. And when you're that young and cute, the argument stands. So basically, I did keep it. So every day, whenever I came home from school, it felt like it was greeting me. It sang to me and it looked at me with these eyes full of love, or at least what I thought was love. I don't know how birds think, honestly. And it ate what I fed it. So I don't really know how to take care of birds. I've never had a bird before that or after. So I kind of fed it like celery and grass, carrots, fruits, turkey, cheese, just whatever I found, whatever I wanted to eat, really. And it felt like I was doing pretty good.
That's your diet, seeds and lettuce.
Seeds and lettuce, yes. I'm actually a bird. So eventually I adapted to it. I didn't give it a name because I wasn't sure like if it was a boy or a girl. I don't know how to sex a bird. So I just called it the bird. Yeah, you're a little apprehensive about that. But one day whenever I came in, I got this different feeling. It didn't come to me like I am used to. And so I looked all over for it, and I have a two-story house, but it never went up to the second story. The bird doesn't really fly for some reason. So I looked for it, and I looked for it, and eventually when I found it, it was just kind of looking at me kind of weirdly like something was wrong with it. So whenever I tried feeding it, and I coddled it and cuddled with it, I even tried to free it, nothing was working. It just seemed like it wasn't taking to anything I was doing. So we went outside, and we try doing all that stuff, and eventually we just like leave it in my sister's hand, and we just look at it, and it's looking around at the sky and at my dog. My dog was known for eating birds, but even my dog was very relaxed, and I was just getting this eerie feeling, and eventually it like looked at me and it chirped and it closed its eyes, and that was the end.
Wow.
And I hadn't understood what that meant, so I told my sister, "You hurry up, bring it back. Why is it sleeping? Wake up, wake up." And she kind of told me, you know, it's dead. So I ran into the house, straight to the closet where all the coats were. And I cried and I cried for hours until eventually I fell asleep. And the only reason I woke up is because my dad came and he asked me what was wrong. And I tell him, "Dad, the bird died. I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. I didn't mean for it to happen." And he's like, "Okay, I'm going to go fix it." Now, as a child and, you know, having a father, you think, oh, dads can fix anything. So my mood picked up and I was super excited about everything. And he comes back with a box. I open it and the bird is inside. And he says, "This is how we deal with these things." So we go out into the backyard and there's a hole dug for it already. And I'm just kind of still confused. And he says, "This is a burial. We have to say what we appreciated about this life that became part of ours. And then we have to lay it to rest." So with tears in my eyes, I basically told the bird, "Thank you. You brought so much joy to me. I'm glad you sang to me. I felt like the male Snow White." And I just started crying and crying and crying. I'm getting looks at the table like, y'all don't know what I'm talking about. But Snow White sang to animals. I know it. And so after that was all said and done, you know, I look back at it. And those times make me realize that the words of Dr. Seuss didn't and sometimes still don't apply to me.
Yeah. That's a beautiful story. And you're going to obviously get a date after that one. That was a great story.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, the thing is that your dad did teach you a lot. And he did fix something. You know, he taught you about loss and about love and how it's an integral part of loss, how you can still love something that's lost. And after you talked about how you fed your bird, I can understand now why you like the seedier places.
No birds there.
I can throw that in there. Yeah. Lots of good stuff in your narrative. Now, if your father was sitting in the studio right now and you could thank him for one thing and you were speaking to him directly, what would it be?
Man, me and my dad don't have these types of conversations, but yeah. I guess if you were sitting here, and I think I've mentioned this before to him, just thank you. Not for anything specific, but everything in general, along with the rest of my family. Thank all of you for the different things you've taught me.
Well, you know, that's a pretty simple thing, but that's something we don't tell our families, not nearly enough in any way, let alone the simplicity of saying those two words, thank you. What's one lesson that you want us to take from this story? These are great stories tonight, folks. They really are. You know, Kenneth and Chuck has got stories so much like this that we're really going to get something out of this. But what is that one lesson that you want us to take from it?
One lesson or one word? Because I can do both.
Give us one lesson.
One lesson?
Yeah, you could use more than a word.
Appreciate your innocence. You know?
Appreciate your innocence. Great. Yeah. And what do you learn from innocence?
You can learn a lot to enjoy the small things while it's around and to feel things when it's appropriate without being apologetic about it.
Listen, Tatiana, are we appreciating any donations? Are we taking in anything for the show right now?
You know, I've heard the phones ring, but we
You have heard the phones
but
ring.
But we haven't gotten anything yet.
Well, you know what I think? I think that maybe Lillian and Michael out there are just taking incredible notes from all of our listeners who want to make some fabulous comments about the stories they're listening to so far and the stories they're going to be listening to every week for the rest of their lives, given the fact that we can afford to stay here. And that's why we need you folks to call. Tatiana, you've been an essential part of this team, and you know our mission, and you listen to most of our programs. You know, for the sake of our listeners who may not know us all that well, name a few of your most memorable stories.
You know, I have loved so many stories, especially from Sneha, yeah. Kiki Maroon, especially... Nadia Hakim herself,
yes.
But one of my favorite ones has been from Greg Donnelly when he came on the show and he was talking about how he met Larry David.
That was great, yes.
It's just because he got it like to the
you
T,
know who Larry
just
David
how he
is right?
on
Larry
Curve
David?
Your Enthusiasm, he is in real life.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. In short, you know, Greg Donnelly, a friend of mine, he has a great khaki company. That's literally what he does. He's in Austin. And he was talking about the time when he saw Larry David in the airport, and he went up to ask him if he wanted a pair of khakis because he's always wearing khakis on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he did this incredible imitation of Larry David, if you've ever seen Curb Your Enthusiasm. He turns to him and says, "What do you mean, like khakis? Well, yeah, khakis. Well, like, what if they don't fit? Well, then you can return them. Yeah, but it's long distance. I got to put them in an envelope. Well, yeah, kind of. It sounds too complicated." And it's just the way that he imitated Larry David. Kenneth is sitting there saying, "Who the hell is Larry David?" It's okay.
The first
episode
life, was
man.
Based
you
on pants
life.
Like that.
You need to watch that stuff, yeah. But he did a great imitation. That was a great story. Anything else come to mind?
Well, with Nadia Hakim.
Kiki Maroon was great. Yeah,
I always mention this one because where she thought that she was a witch. At some point, she thought she had, like, these superpowers with Nadia's
right. yes.
Story, one where she introduced her partner to her family on the holidays, on
right.
it,
we
Thanksgiving.
Have had some very,
and her grandmother didn't know she was fully out yet.
We've had some very remarkable, right? She came out of the closet, let her grandmother know, and that was a great... But, I mean, the stories have really been pretty marvelous. We've had hundreds of them over the years, and I can't think of one that I have not enjoyed. Great choices to represent a great community. So What's Your Story mirrors the face of Houston, and we are proud of that. This is Hank Rubicek with Tatiana Gago, and you are enjoying stories by Chuck Vaughn, Heidi Lozano, Kenneth Martinez, Enrico Enrique on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 for our friends in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. You know, you'll enjoy memorable live stories every week, but we need your help to keep rolling along, and you can't rely on the other guy. 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT is the number to call with your donations to tell us whether we matter or not, because storytelling does something more profound than any of us can do alone. Connect. Stories help us plug in without plugging anything in. But you already know that, because when I started the show in 2008 as an open journal, you said, "Hank, you know what? Once a month isn't enough. We want it every week." Well, you got it. And it's a lot of work to keep it going. And it's your generosity that keeps storytelling in town. 713-526-5738 or tap into kpft.org. Donations, form of payment, and then scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you love. And boy, that's a lot of love on KPFT. We're sandwiched between the Progressive Forum with Wally James and Lars and the Tennyson Tapes, a primetime Thursday that you're not going to find anywhere but to right here on KPFT 90.1 FM. Tatiana, you know, I've been producing more than hosting lately, and I miss it. This is a lot of fun.
You're a man of many talents.
Oh, yeah, right. Sure. Like spilling water and making a mess of the studio.
That was impressive.
That was very impressive, right. Listen, tell us about Houston as a storytelling hub, because we know it is.
And a hub it is. Let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild hosts a Story Swap the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset, directly across from Rice University. It's a great place to tell stories to a supportive group of like-minded people. Their next swap is going to be May 28th, so just go to the website, HoustonStorytellers.org for more information, especially about joining the guild. And while you're there, click on the radio program on the menu to enjoy hundreds of shows since 2008. So you better get started. But you don't need a radio to listen to our show. You can listen to us live on www.kpft.org. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Also, if you have a if you have any program ideas or comments for anyone on our team, drop us a note at story@kpft.org, and we will get back to you. We promise. Our friends at The Moth hold a Story Slam at Warehouse Live on the second Tuesday of the month. Well, most months, because this month it will be May 21st, when Mama rules. Stories can range from being a mama's boy to mommy dearest. Doors are going to open at 6:30, and it's more fun than the law allows. But right now, we are hoping our listeners rule by calling us at 713-526-5738, Jam KPFT, with donations on this, the first night of our spring fun drive.
Thank you, Tatiana, for that thorough report. And yes, we want to hear more phones ringing off the proverbial hook. Tatiana is the poster person of a hardworking player on this program, and a friendly reminder that we are not paid except for our love for story and your approval. That's how we're paid. But you don't listen in and say, you know what, it's a terrible show. But what do you expect from a bunch of guys who aren't paid? You want excellence, and you get it every week, because none of us, especially you, would want it any other way. Great stories told by Houstonians, the kind of stories that transform us. 713-526-5738 with your donations, and give us your comment about the show. Tell us what you think. I'll read it and thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. Well, Kenneth and Chuck have been waiting patiently in the wings with stories to tell, so let's get to them. Kenneth Martinez is majoring in business administration. He loves animals, music, and is planning a career in real estate. And Kenneth, you took a class in storytelling. Why?
Well, I took this class because I think it's very essential in any business that you have. In advertisement most, you need to have a story to tell in order to advertise.
So let me understand this. You looked at the catalog and you took a look at Communication 1303 and you said, that's the course for me. That's a course that I'm going to need in the business world?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, right. You really did say that?
Yes.
Okay, most people say easy A, but okay, I appreciate 10 o'clock, sounds like a good time. I need a communication course, so why not that one? But I appreciate your honesty, Kenneth. Hmm. Okay, you love music and you love animals, and tell us a little bit about the kind of favorite music that you've got.
Well, my favorite kind of music is it's called sierreños, a type of Mexican.
Beautiful, I'm familiar with that. Great, beautiful. And I love the story that you are going to tell. This one has got some real intricacy to it, and it is a story that our listeners are going to learn very quickly. It has so much relevance in terms of what's happening in our world right now, especially on the borders. It's about your grandfather, and it took place in a setting that was far less cozy than the one Heidi and Rico painted a little bit earlier. Tell us the story.
Well, we've heard about drug cartels. We've heard about them in the radio, on TV, but I never expected to be face to face with them. It was May 2013. My grandparents had came over a couple months before, you know, just to shop around, get a little things. But after they came, every summer I would go back with them.
So what happened? Well, I know. Don't worry about it. Don't worry, man. We get a little apprehensive. When you were with your grandfather, tell us what happened when you were stopped by those hoods.
So the first thing happened as we started our journey from Bryan, Texas, mm-hmm. all the way to Reynosa. We were stopped at the border. You know, that was the first red light that came up to me, because you usually don't get stopped in these kinds of scenarios. You either get a green light or a red light. And for some reason, this time we got a red light. Mm-hmm. We were stopped. They checked the whole truck, and as usual, my grandpa would fill the truck up so high that it was slanted down. Like, it had so much pressure on it. So they had to undo everything he had done. They checked everything. And that was the first red flag, because we usually never got stopped. And we would take this trip almost every summer to Chiapas, which would take approximately 3 days from Bryan, Texas, all the way to Chiapas. After they let us go, we continued on. We were driving down the road. I was chilling in the back. I was listening to music. I had my earphones on. I was listening to Narco Corridos. And for those who don't know, that type of genre is basically music that talks about drug cartels. So as we were driving down the road, somehow my grandpa got lost, which usually never happens, but they had a road closed down. So they closed the road, and my grandfather had to find another way to get there. So we took a different route, and we were driving past a cop, and all of a sudden he stops us. Now, we were puzzled because we usually don't get stopped, especially not in Mexico. It's rare that you get stopped. So my grandfather, he just pulled over. And as he pulled over, as usual, the cop gets out, goes to the window and asks, "Do you know why I stopped you?" My grandfather replied, "No, I don't know why you stopped me." He said, "Well, you have too much things in the back of your truck." That was an instant red flag, because for those that have not traveled to Mexico, everywhere that you see, there's like so many trucks, so many cars that have so much things in the back of the car. So we were puzzled at why he stopped us for that reason. So he said, "Give us a minute." The policeman went back to his car, and we see three more officers pop up out of the cop car. They're walking towards us. And as they get to our windows, they pull out their guns. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. My grandfather, he was just speechless. He didn't know what to do. They were asking him for money, and they were asking it in dollars. They're like, "We know you're coming from the U.S. There's no other way that you have this many things if you're coming from somewhere in Mexico." My grandfather kept refusing and didn't want to give him any money, not in U.S. dollars. So what they did, they opened the door. They pulled me out of the car, and they pointed a gun to my head. Now, at this time, everything was going to my mind. Am I going to die? I'm too young to die. God, I'm sorry for listening to Narco Corridos. I was sitting there just looking at them with the gun pointed at my face. Now, for some reason, the guy asked for my name, and they were all wearing walkie-talkies. So he asked for my name, and I said, "Well, my name is Kenneth Martinez." He leaves my side and says my name through the walkie-talkie. He then comes back, puts me in the car. I'm puzzled. I don't know what's going on. And they just say, "You're free to go." We continue our journey. My grandfather finally found the right road to get onto, and we got safe to our house. The next day that we got to our destination, my father calls me, and he says, "Do you know what happened?" Said, "No, I don't have any, like, I have no idea of what happened. They just let us go. They had a gun pointed at my head, and all of a sudden, they just let us go." He said, "Well, you know that since our family lives in the border, the only resource they have to get money is to be in the drug cartels. So when they said your name through the walkie-talkie, your uncle heard your name, and they let you go."
That was great. That was great. Listen, I got to tell you something, and there's nothing scripted here. That was a fabulous story, Kenneth. And you know, when you tell stories, it is so human, it's so raw, and sometimes we become paralyzed. We just do, and we just have to let that story unfold. And listeners need to listen to this because everybody's a storyteller. Everybody's a storyteller, and this is one of the most serious things that I've ever talked about on this show. No one should ever ask themselves if I have a story to tell. And no one should ever have any trepidation about telling the story that's in their heart. There isn't anybody who could tell the story that Kenneth just told. There isn't anybody who can. Nobody can talk about a riveting episode about having guns pointed to his head with your grandfather having that fear in his heart and his mind as this is happening to his grandson. Nobody else can do that. And that's important for everyone to understand. And I am going to bring it into this donation thing again, because this is what you're paying for. You know, the kind of thing that you're listening to every week, what Kenneth just offered, what Rico just offered, Heidi and Chuck in just a minute, the kinds of things that you're listening here are things that define our lives. Your lives are your stories, and your story is your life. That's how we're defined. Every day, it's a blank page that's being filled. And this was a great story, and I really appreciate you telling that, and I appreciate the courage that it took to finishing it, Kenneth. I really do. I know that you felt fear. What else were you feeling as the situation was going down, other than fear?
Well, I was just in shock because, like, we hear about these things in the radio, we see it on TV, You never expect it to
Not
happen
at all.
To one. So.
Yeah. What did you take from the experience?
Well, what I took from the experience is to just not take my life for granted.
Yeah.
Because every day we have is a gift.
Every moment. Every moment. Chuck, you know, you've been on this program before, and you're a terrific teller. And you've got a plethora of experiences. I've had a good fortune of having Chuck in my class, and I heard an even greater range of dynamic narratives. He performs at places like Comedy Sports, The Secret Group, and Station Theater. He's a soon-to-be graduate from UHD, and he's got an optimistic future in front of him. Chuck, first of all, let me ask you, you know, what's that optimistic future look like?
So on May 13th, I start rehearsals for a musical happening over at the Match this summer called Speeding Motorcycles. So if you're around the theater district anytime soon over in Midtown, I suggest you check that out. I also have had some very positive interviews with a nonprofit in the area. I don't want to speak too much and jinx it, but I might have a new position this June.
Fabulous. That's a good deal. That is a good deal. Great. Tell us about the best part you ever played on stage. I've always meant to ask you that. What's the best part you ever played on stage?
Well, I want to say Teen Angel in Greece. It was actually the second time.
Teen Angel in Greece?
Teen Angel in Greece. Beauty School Dropout is a really fun
fabulous
song to sing.
Right.
And just to sing that and dance that, and I had this all-white costume. It was just a blast.
That is a cool part. That is a very, very cool part. The last story that you told in class I thought was riveting because it was an account of raw impressions that you had of some people that you labeled as different, more precisely weirdos. And this was a great story with incredible introspection. It was a little different than the stories that you usually tell. Share it with us.
So I am 27 years old, and in my life, as I meet more and more people, I tend to leave an interesting impression, and that impression is that of someone filled with confidence, someone that seems to have some sort of idea of what it is he's doing in this world. And eventually, as I talk to folks, they ask, Chuck, how did you become this person? And really, I tell them it happened by chance, and I took a risk and I tried something new. It was 2018, a year as dear to me as it is to you all here at So What's Your Story, and it was the first day of class after winter holiday break in January. I'm in the 10th grade at this point, and I'm attending North Shore High School over in the Galena Park area. I was on my way to theater class, and as I approached the door, my teacher, Mr. Heitzman, stopped me and said, Chuck, wait right here for me really quick. I just want to talk to you. So I do, and I'm walking my classmates into the classroom, and they're looking at me with eyes asking what happened, and I'm shrugging at them, having no idea why he wants to talk to me on the first day of class. Eventually, everyone arrives, and he comes outside, and he looks at me, and he says, "Chuck, you actually pay attention to my class. I need someone to fill in for the play that we're working in right now. Would you like to do it?" So I look at him and I look around in the empty hallway, and theater isn't something I'd ever done. I was, for the most part, a recluse. I didn't spend a lot of time with other people. I went to school and went home and played games on my computer or listened to music or watched Cartoon Network or Comedy Central, even though I shouldn't have. So I pulled out my phone, I called my mom, and I'd asked her if I could stay after school. Something I'd never done before at this point, and surprisingly, she said yes, which led to my first visit to the senior high. North Shore had two campuses, a ninth grade campus and the campus where the 10th, 11th, and the 12th graders were. So I'd been there, so I arrived there, and I looked around, and I was in the theater for the first time, a large proscenium with red velvet seats going up into the sky, and around me, people I'd never seen before. And most of us, when we think of a theater person, we come up with some pretty interesting adjectives like they're strange or they're weird and words like that. But I'd come to find that the people around me in that room were the most confident, the strongest people that I had ever met in school. The first thing they'd asked me to do was if I could talk in a country accent. And before then, I didn't really have any sort of reference as to the fact that I had a very monotonous way of speaking like this. I never considered the idea of having any sort of inflection in the way I spoke. I just spoke without any thought. So I thought about it. Can I talk in a country voice? And slowly and slowly and surely, I started to bend my lips and squeeze on different parts of my throat muscles, and eventually I found myself talking in this very interesting tone, and everybody around me were all amazed and happy and hooping and hollering, doing all of that. And in that moment, and in the entire experience of my being in that play, Bat Boy the Musical, for any theater fans out there, I managed to learn a lot about myself. I learned that I could sing, I could dance, I could act, and most of all, I actually did enjoy the company of other people. I liked the attention that being on stage got me, and I liked the freedom to be someone that I didn't know that I could be. Theater changed my life, and I don't say that to recruit anyone into doing theater, but just to implore other people out there listening tonight to try something new. When I talk to people and they mention this interesting impression that I give of having all this confidence and having an idea of what I'm doing, and they ask me how it came to be, I just tell them it sort of happened and I took a chance, and now I'm the person I am today.
Fabulous. You know, the irony is that I think you really do have to know yourself in order to be a good actor. Is that fair?
That's fair.
I think you really do. You know, give us an example, Chuck, of a way you might use this story as a compass for making a life decision.
The biggest thing that I would take away is not shorting yourself and robbing yourself of an opportunity, because I could have very well said no to my theater teacher, mm-hmm. and maybe later mm-hmm. on in life I would have found myself acting and doing what I am now, but I wouldn't have gotten there as fast as I did. And I've been acting now for over 10 years because of it.
Right. Everybody does these challenges. Heidi, what is the weirdest thing you've ever done that you don't regret?
There's so many.
This is a family show. It's a family show. So be thinking about
PG-13,
that.
PG-13, please.
Anything?
Well, not that I can think about.
Yeah.
Weirdest thing.
Don't worry about it. We'll come back. Rico, you must have a short list at least.
A short list? I don't know if that one exists, but I'm glad you have such high hopes for me. Weird things I've done.
Yeah. A weird thing. You have no regrets.
No regrets.
I got a lot of regrets. I'm not going to, but yeah.
I tripped on the bottom of my pants because they were too long on a staircase.
Right.
And so whenever I was on the floor, I threw my hands up in the air to play it off, but no one was looking at me in the first place.
Okay.
So that was pretty embarrassing and weird.
Right.
And
right.
I think I'll take that with me and to myself.
And for the rest of your life, that's great. And, you know, have you ever thought about rolling up your cuffs or have you
thought about pants that fit now?
Now you buy pants that fit. Well, that's, yeah. That's great. Yeah, I'm really sorry I asked this question. God, you guys are so boring. What is the matter with you? Kenneth!
Well,
we got cuffs and we can't think of anything.
Think the weirdest thing
What's the matter with you people?
Think the weirdest thing that I've done...
Is tell a story tonight.
Was...
Other than that.
Was when I was six, I had this frame on my wall, which was a fish, and every time you passed by it, it would move. So I decided to open it up and... Just cut it open, and my mom came in, and she saw that it was
just
open.
You cut open a fish?
Well, I mean, it was a fake fish, but yes.
Well, what do you mean a fake fish? What do you mean?
It was like... It was
a dead fish, like the bird Rico was talking about, or you mean...
Yes.
What do you mean a fake fish?
No, it was like plastic.
I was plastic fish.
Small and I wanted to see
what
was
inside.
Well,
you were studying to be a veterinary surgeon or something like that, right? Yeah. Right.
I was just curious.
Well, I was curious. That's all right. You want to be a surgeon, don't you, Heidi?
Yes, I do.
What kind of a surgeon do you want to be? Don't say a good one. You know, what kind of a surgeon do you want to be?
A great one.
A great one.
A general surgeon.
Yeah. Okay. What got you interested in being a surgeon?
I would say...
Was it taking the storytelling class? Or what was it exactly that prompted that interest?
Learning about the hard head and gut.
From the book.
There you go. Yeah. That's okay. You know, recently on Facebook, I wrote that the stories that I hear from guests allow me to feel like I've known them for years. It's what stories do, and it's what I feel about each of you right now. It's one of the reasons I want to ask that question, because that's what it's all about. You know, we access information from each other, but we also get ideas, seeds, for developing these stories. It's about the depth and the richness that comes from digging deep and courageously revealing the truth about something. And I think that's what all of us do when we tell stories. Personal development author Dan Milliman said, "You don't just have a story. You're a story in the making. And you never know what the next chapter is going to be." And that's what makes it exciting. Anyone to thank Tatiana at this point?
Well, I guess I could say is that all the people who come on this show and tell their stories.
How about people who are donating? We have anybody there to thank?
No, I haven't received.
Of course we want to thank all of these people. Of course we do. Of course we do. We want to hear these phones coming in. You know, it wouldn't be pretty to tune in and hear. That's right. Silence. So why take the chance? Because you can call 713-526-5738 or get online, in line, out of line. Hell, I don't even care if you're in a lineup. But go to kpft.org and donate. Or come by 419 Lovett, give us your donation, and Tatiana will tell you a story. This is KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, Pacifica Radio, fueled for peace. Next week, our good friend Eric Heen will continue our spring fun drive when he hosts Dr. Daniel Pena, Jasmine Mendez, and Christopher Flakis, three brilliant tellers who construct stories with a creative fusion of fiction and nonfiction for the story lover in us. Only on So What's Your Story? You know, Lisa Pearson was a student of mine some time ago in the storytelling class, and she told a story on this program that reminded me of the types of stories that each of you told tonight. It's a little bit different, but I think you'll see the connection. Tatiana, if you would, please.
My grandmother was a huge inspiration. She was just kind of plugged into love. One of the things that my grandmother really provided for me in my life was a sense of tremendous faith and a sense of tremendous optimism. Now, when I was younger, I kind of mistook those qualities that she bestowed onto me as being weakness and as being ignorance. But as I got older, I started to realize that it was just a tremendous humility that she had about all the things that she couldn't explain, that she didn't know, all of the things that resided in the unseen and in the mysterious and the supernatural. There are many things that we know, that we can touch, that we can discuss, that we can analyze, but quite frankly, there's much, much more in the unseen that we can't explain. Now, my grandmother was a very tall woman. She was actually close to 6 foot tall, and she had really huge feet. They were long and skinny and just huge. So like any of us, she shopped according to her body shape and size, and the shoes that she always picked out for herself were always the same style. The toe was rounded or boxy because she didn't want to emphasize her foot's length, and then the heel was a short heel because she didn't want to emphasize her height. Now, my story isn't really about my grandmother's taste in shoes. It's really about the unseen. You just need that information for later. So, the women in my family, especially on my father's side, they have this tendency to come back and visit various family members after they have died. And the first time I remember this happening, it was when I was little. My grandmother would pull me down in her lap, and she would tell me this story about how her sister had come back to visit her in a dream. In the dream, she told my grandmother that she had found peace beyond a human comprehension, beyond all human comprehension. And I was little and I was bored by stories that any adult told me, so I'd try to like wiggle out of her lap and escape like a stray cat. And as soon as she finished the story, I would shoot out and I would go find my sister to play. I didn't think too much of it. But later, after my grandmother died, she actually showed up in my uncle's dream, and this time I was a lot older, and I really took the time to listen, because my uncle is a very practical, very business-oriented man, so he doesn't really spend a lot of time thinking about mysterious supernatural things. Now, in his dream, he was walking down the hall in my grandmother and my grandfather's house, and he was headed towards her bedroom, and he knew she was in there because coming from her room was the swelling, angelic, the most beautiful music that he had ever heard in his life. And spilling from the door was this bright, nutrient light. Now, as he was walking down the hall, he had this sense that he wasn't going to make it in time. So he quickly called out, "Are you still in pain?" And she said, "Not anymore," and the door shut. The third time it happened to me, but it didn't happen in a dream. I was actually awake. I was actually shopping for shoes. I was looking through the racks, and I noticed this pair of shoes that I knew wouldn't fit me and weren't my style, but I had this unreasonable impulse to reach up my hand, grab them, and try them on. I put them down on the floor, and as my foot slipped into them, I recognized that of course they were too big, because they were really for my grandmother. And at that moment, I was full of her presence, and I got the sense that she was with me, and we were shopping together. And I also got the sense that she had a knowledge that she knew. So I immediately apologized for my 20s. Because that's what you do when you realize your grandmother knows everything. And she let me know that she knew. She knew, and that it was okay, and that my life was gonna be okay. And there was something about that moment. I really needed to hear that everything was gonna be okay. And I got the distinct sense that me and my grandmother, we just continued shopping.
That's fabulous. Kenneth, I want you to hear this part. Lisa didn't think she had a story to tell. This is a beautiful story about her grandmother and about, you know, the metaphysical world and about a number of things. But right before she told this story, right before she stood up and she said, "I don't think I can do this." That's the truth. So, you know, everybody needs to know again that sometimes these riveting stories with profound insights, I think profound insights, are the ones that come from those who just don't think they own them. And that, to me, is remarkable, because these are astonishing stories. What did you guys think of that story?
Definitely very powerful.
It's just, we're talking about a story. It's about a lingering forever love, just like what the four of you talked about. You know, Chuck's was a little bit different, but not really, because Chuck also talked about some of these insights about those who surround us and the kind of impressions that they share and how we define ourselves ultimately. So whether it be strangers or colleagues or peers or our family, we're talking about a lingering forever love. And this is something that works. And the other thing that I want to say is that, you know, in Lisa's case, she didn't think she had a story to tell. That's really the DNA for all good storytellers. They don't think they have a story to tell. That's the humanness of it all. Our life really is our story, and our story is our life. And here's a story about a really wonderful friend of our show, Paul Topekian. We want to thank him for his very generous donation. Thank you, Paul. Please join Paul and give us a call at 713-528-5738. And we are going to be all over the place listening to other stories every week, week in and week out. And we just would really appreciate it if you helped us out. So again, that number is 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT. And we will love you forever. Let's talk a little bit more about what inspires stories. Rico, you know, hardships fuel your stories. Tell us why.
Man, I've had so much, I guess you could say, unlucky and unfortunate events happen in my life that if I took to the negative route of just being all upset about it, I would be so miserable. I'd be so over it.
Right.
But, you know, the person that I am, I get angry. But it fuels me. It motivates me. It makes me think whatever bad thing just happened, the best way to get back at it or them is just to do better, to overcome it, and really just kind of stick it to them.
That's great. That is a great comment. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you are right. Chuck, what surprised you most about learning to tell stories versus performing on stage?
The thing that you mentioned to me the last time that we told our stories nailed it on the head, the fact that while doing a play, I'm becoming someone else. When I'm telling a story, I'm revealing who I am and sharing that.
Yeah, and that becomes a little risky, doesn't it? Even a little scary sometimes. I know. Kenneth, give us one good reason everyone needs to tune into this program every week.
Well,
because we need your help, man. Tell us why.
Everyone should tune in to listen to this program because you're just going to get the most raw stories that you could get every single time.
That's pretty well told. I like that. I like that. And that is true. You know, it's mostly personal narratives, but we also go that traditional route. We've had some great fairy tale tellers on and people who tell fantasies and fables and the kinds of things that just will rock your soul in every way. Adult stories, children's stories, all kinds of stories. A little earlier, I was talking about Nikki Cazares, who made an incredible impression. KPFT made it possible for Anthony Graves to know that he was free from the death penalty. Can you imagine that? And she was on here talking about the story and how her students at St. Thomas helped her get the evidence that was required to get this guy off of death row. We have stories about that. We had a story about a mother who debuted her story about how her daughter was murdered in Detroit. I mean, I had a jaw that was open a mile long because I did not know that's what she was going to say. So, you know, we hear these things. People tell us these stories. People who live here, our neighbors, and they are fabulous. They're just fabulous. Heidi, when we talk a little bit about when someone says, for example, I'd like to tell a story, but I don't really have anything interesting that happened in my life. What would you say to them?
I would say to them that you have a story to tell because everyone either have something or someone significant in their lives.
Right.
Everyone laughs, cries, and there are stories behind that.
Yeah.
And I would tell that person that I encourage you to tell your story because we want to hear it. There's always something that we can learn from it.
That's beautiful. That is. You guys learned a lot. I loved having you on here. Thank you. Heidi Lozano, Chuck Vaughn, Kenneth Martinez, and Rico Enrique for your stories and the power with which they resonated and for helping us prove the transformative nature of storytelling during our spring fun drive. To all of you, it only takes 90.1 seconds, you know, to give us a call at 713-526-5738. Don't you dare leave, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of every day, while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling. Join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.